You're listening to the best of Halford and Brough. You're listening to Halford and Brough.
As Yossi goes to the goal, to the forehand, stopped by Shelobs, it was behind him in the crease, it rolls in, they score!
You know, we thought about it, but I thought it was 50-50, personally. I don't know what the NHL would do on that one, I don't.
Coward!
I knew, I feel like we should have won that game, yeah.
Ow! Ow! Oh, they're defending themselves somehow!
Good morning, Vancouver 601 on a Wednesday. Happy Wednesday, everybody. It is Halford, it is Brough, it is Sportsnet 650. We are coming to you live from the Kintec Studios in beautiful Fairview Slopes in Vancouver. Jason, good morning.
Good morning.
A-Dog, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Laddie, good morning to you as well.
Hello, hello.
And intern Zach, good morning to you as well.
And good morning, Halford and Brough.
We're wearing all black again.
We're doing it. We're doing it.
It's like the Canucks suffered a terrible loss last night.
It's like they had a chance to win and they didn't.
It's like a funeral's breaking out of there.
We are in mourning. Just Halford and Brough. Halford and Brough in the morning is brought to you by the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. Experience the Dilawri difference today by visiting your nearest Dilawri Acura dealer today. We are wearing a lot of black. We are in hour one of this program. Hour one is brought to you by North Star Metal Recycling, Vancouver's premier metal recycler. Pays the highest prices on scrap metal. North Star Metal Recycling. They recycle. You get paid. Visit them at 1170 Powell Street in Vancouver.
We are coming to you live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for?
Kintec, that's what you're waiting for. If you like Halford and Brough, today is the show for you, because we only have two guests today. So it's a lot of us.
Oh, ooh, that's not good for anyone. Okay.
Adam Kimmelman's going to join the program at 7 a.m. He's covering the Preds Canucks series for NHL.com. So here's how it's going to work. The first 90 minutes of this program are going to be almost exclusively Canucks Preds. We have a ton to get into following Vancouver's 2-1 loss to the Nashville Predators in Game 5 at Rogers Arena on Tuesday night. As mentioned, Adam Kimmelman's working the series for NHL.com. He's going to join us at 7. At 8 o'clock, huge get. Tough to get this guy on the air, Jamie Dodd. Going to join the program.
I really had to twist his arm, but
you may know him from every other show on this station.
Laddie, you worked, or A-Dog, you worked your butt off. I know. To get this show booked.
It was a tough one.
This was really incredible.
I know. I figured we might take a bunch of listener calls today. I don't know how you guys feel about that.
Truly.
You looked ahead at today and you said, we got no one and we're going to have no one.
Yeah.
Except for Adam Kimmelman.
Jamie Dodd had no one,
according to Brough.
Jamie Dodd,
from his best friend.
Yeah, that's rude.
Jamie Dodd works for our radio station.
Well, at the moment, he does not. He is a guest.
Jamie Dodd's going to join us at 8. Adam Kilman's going to join us at 7. We are giving away a $100 gift card to Primetime Bridge Brewing for the best What We Learned. Get him in now. A lot of people are weighing in already to the Dunbar Lumber text line. 650, 650. Hashtag it WWL. Put a beer emoji into your text. You'll be entered into the grand prize contest. It is a contest to win a $100 gift card to Primetime Bridge Brewing. That is the program. That's what's happening today. Laddie, let's tell everybody what happened.
Hey, did you guys see the game last night?
No. Oh, what happened?
I missed all the action because I was...
We know how busy your life can be.
What happened?
Missed it? You missed that?
What Happened is brought to you by the BC Construction Safety Alliance, making safety simpler by giving construction companies the best in tools, resources, and safety training. Visit them online at bccsa.ca. Alexander Carrier scored the go-ahead goal 12 minutes and 46 seconds into the third period. The Nashville Predators, those plucky Nashville Predators, they avoided elimination. They won 2-1 in Vancouver to take Game 5 of the first round Western Conference Series. Series now goes back to Nashville. For game 6.
Okay, let's recap this game so we can fairly discuss it. Okay, the first two periods, overall, pretty even. Each team struggled at times to create quality scoring chances, especially with the man advantage. The PK units were looking good. The power plays, not so much. Seelovs and Saros made a handful of quality saves, and a couple of posts got hit. I think it's fair to say the Canucks were the better team in the first, much better team in the first even, and the Preds had the upper hand in the second. But neither team could break through. and we went into the third tied at zero. There was finally a goal 3 minutes into the third. A few moments after the Canucks nearly scored a couple of times, one chance by Petey, another by Suter, but the Preds, they could not stop. Checks notes. Nikita Zadorov. The big Russian looked like Nikita Bobiorov.
I'll allow it.
On an end-to-end rush that he finished off with a top cheddar shot from a sharp angle that Saros probably should have stopped, if we're being honest. It was a nice shot. Laddie was we were all celebrating in the text thread, and Laddie was like, what was Saros doing? I'm like, stop being such a goalie geek for 1 second and just enjoy the moment, Laddie.
Very on brand.
What was he doing on that? I just don't think he was ready for Zadorov to shoot. I think he was playing pass pretty much the whole way.
Well, he got him in transition. He took it to a good spot on the ice.
Yeah.
Smart play by Zadorov.
And he ripped it. At any rate, the Preds tied it up a few minutes later on the power play after Dakota Joshua was called for boarding. Roman Josi took the puck to the net and got credit for the goal. And though it looked like the Canucks were thinking about challenging for goaltender interference on Gustav Nyquist, and we'll talk about this later in the show, the Canucks ultimately decided it was not worth the risk. So we're tied again. Fun. Great. The Canucks nearly got the lead right back after the Preds evened it up, but Saros stopped Brock Besser on a semi-breakaway. Garland had a nice chance, too, on a one-timer after Preds' turnover. So it was a good response by the Canucks to the Preds tying it up. But the Preds got the chances then. They had an incredible chance when Ryan McDonough missed an open net on a bounce off the end boards.
That was not a good finish by Ryan McDonough.
No worries for the Preds, though. It didn't matter because Will Carrier, of all players, gave them the lead with 7 minutes remaining when his point shot found its way through a bunch of bodies and eventually passed Seelov's.
Alex Carrier.
Whatever. Who cares? You know, a lot of people wondered if Nashville would be psychologically destroyed after the way Game 4 ended, but there was no sign of that last night. The Preds were not going out without a fight, and once again, the Canucks had trouble getting pucks on Saros. They didn't get their 20th shot until the final moments of the game, and that's how many shots they finished with in a 2-1 loss. Where would you like to start the discussion? With Will Carrier or Alex Carrier?
Yeah, let's start with which player scored the goal. No, I mean, your first question was, how big a loss with this is this? And I think that's the right place to start because there's a lot of things that we can dive into minutia-wise here, but big picture, how big a loss is this? And it's pretty big. It is. There's no other way to look at it. You can say that the Canucks played well in the first and third periods and they had their opportunities. Here's what I know. A team that had prided itself on being able to close out games when they had a lead in the third period had a lead in the third period last night in an elimination game. The closiest out of all the closeout games. That was the one that they really needed to lean back on that. When we get a lead in the third, we know how to finish the job. And they weren't able to get it done. Now, as everybody knows, this series goes back to Nashville. And this is not just about this series. If you have aspirations of going anywhere in these playoffs, given that you're down to your third string goalie, your players are getting banged up left and right. Guys have fallen ill. You've seen it in other series. Things do happen.
Like a bangs and bruises.
Bangs and bruises. Injuries coming up out of nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
You want to be able to finish people off and get the series done. So in my mind, it's a big loss. It was a frustrating one because they had the game in their grasp. I felt when it was 0-0 going into the third period that one goal was going to win it. I think it should have.
Mm-hmm.
I think that that game, given how low the shot totals were, although to be fair, with 20 shots on goal, the Canucks had 13 high danger chances. They did have a lot of really good looks on net, without question. And the Preds hit a bunch of posts too, so probably could have been more than a one goal game. But at the end of the day, 0-0 after 40 minutes, you get that goal in the third. Playoff hockey, you should close that out. That should be a disappointing loss for you.
Yeah, I mean,
you should close it out.
I don't think a 1-0 lead in the third period.
But you should
one
close
of those,
it out.
Okay, well, what does that mean? You should close it out. Like 100% of the time, you got to close that out?
Yep.
Okay. Well, I'm going to disagree with that. That is,
gotta close it out.
Okay. All right. Let's talk about the Nashville goal that did tie it up when the Canucks should have been closing it out. Dakota Joshua takes probably an undisciplined penalty there. I don't think you want to get called for boarding at that point in the game with, you know, a 1-0 lead and, you know, Halford sitting there, you got to close this out. And then Dakota Joshua takes a bad boarding penalty. But more importantly, I think, and I know everyone's been talking about it, should Rick Tocchet have challenged that call? Now, it's easy in hindsight to say, well, yeah, they lost, so he should have called. He should have challenged it. But I have to admit, this isn't just in hindsight. When I saw the replay, and we were all on our chat together, and especially Laddie, who knows the goalie interference rules probably better than most people, I was kind of like, yeah, like Nyquist clearly pitchforked him, the goalie. He didn't touch the puck. And then Seeloff slid into the puck, and the puck went into the net. And I was like, "Are you not allowed to do that, right?
If
like, you're not allowed
you,
to do that,
if
right?
The act of you pushing the goalie is what propels the puck into the net, no goal.
Right.
You cannot push the goalie and then have the puck go into the net.
So can we hear what Rick Tocchet had to say about why he did not challenge that goal?
Yeah, it's a 50. If it's we're down 2-1 maybe, but it's a 50-50 at that point. We just looked at it. I don't know what the NHL would do on that one. I don't. So if I don't know 100%, you know, it's 1-1. You know, we thought about it, but I thought it was 50-50, personally.
So a lot of people have said, well, the math on that is you should challenge it then, because if it's 50-50, then...
And your PK is at 90-plus percent. Yeah. You'll probably kill it off even if you're wrong.
Probably
and by the way,
kill it off.
You would have won that. They would have won that call guaranteed. I guarantee you they would have.
Okay, we've got a lot of people very confident right now. We got to close it out, and we got 100% they're going to call that
back. They would have. You look at the replay, and the puck is not over the line. Mm. Clearly watch the replay. Anybody can see
it. Is the puck sitting and doing nothing?
Correct.
Yes. That was my thought on it.
And then whoever it was, yeah. Nyquist, was it Nyquist, Forsberg, who cares, whoever it was, his skate, and granted this is all in the span of half a second, it's very quick, but if you watch the replay, his skate hit Seeloff's first and then directs him into the net with the puck prior to Zadorov crushing him.
Yeah.
So that is the order in which the events occurred. I am sure, I guarantee you, the Canucks would have won that challenge. Even if they hadn't, though, they would have killed off the penalty.
Well, okay, well, you got to guarantee that, too. Okay, and then Halford would be like, you guys got to kill this penalty.
Yeah.
Got to kill it.
They would have.
Got to kill it.
They would have.
You can't close it out if it's 1-1. There's nothing to close. Okay. So the one thing that I thought was eyebrow raising with the non-challenge was the night before in the Tampa Bay Florida series, we saw two goals chalked off for very, very questionable, in my estimation, goalie interference calls, where I thought that if that's the bar for what goalie interference is, then you may as well gamble on that 50-50, right? And you bring up a good point that the penalty kill was clicking pretty well. The Preds didn't have much going on the power play.
Someone just texted in, would have been 5-on-3, you clowns. No, it wouldn't have been you clown, because it would have been a goal, and then Zadorov's penalty would have been off, and then it would have been a penalty, so it would have been 5-on-4.
A lot of definitive statements early on the Halford and Bruff show this morning. The early clown call.
Incorrect definitive statements.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I respect it. I mean, he heard Halford, you know, talking in these definitives, then A-Dog in the definitives, and he's like, I want to be part of this. And then he added a, you clowns, which I also respect. If you would like to call us clowns or have any questions about or comments about the game last night, you can text into the Dunbar Lumber text line at 650-650. Dunbar Lumber, with three stores to serve you, in Ladner on Bridge Street, Dunbar Lumber Express at Ladner Center, or Arbutus in Vancouver, online at DunbarLumber.com. So listen, we can talk all day about whether or not Tocchet should have challenged, and A-Dog can say it definitely wouldn't have been a goal, and Halford can sit there and say you got to close out that game when it's 1-0. But I prefer in my life to look ahead in life, because I've got that goldfish memory that all winners have, and I look ahead to things. Is it time for Tocca to make some changes to the forward lines? Because look at the shot totals that they have had in the five games of this series. And I realize it's not always on the forwards, and a lot of it's on, you know, getting the puck up to the forwards. And, you know, you got to tip your cap to the Preds for what they're doing to block shots, et cetera, et cetera. But 21 shots in game one, 18 in game two, 12 in game three, which they somehow won, 21 in game four, which they somehow won, and just 20 last night at home in game five. So they're averaging fewer than 20 shots per game. That is, I don't think I've ever seen anything like that.
Well, you haven't. The Canucks, 92 shots on goal through five games, second fewest in NHL history. So, and the NHL goes back a long way. There's been a lot of playoff games and a lot of five-game stretches where teams have just not had this amount of futility in terms of getting shots on net.
So one of the things that you have been calling for a lot, and I've kind of gone, it doesn't work. We don't want to do that. Is the to reunite the Lotto line.
Yep.
And I do wonder if it's time to do that or do something a little more drastic. Are the Canucks at that point where they have to do something drastic? Like, for example, last night, the Leafs down 3-1 did something drastic, at least in their coach's mind, not in Laddie's because he was so sure that this should have been done right from the start. They changed goalies.
Yeah.
They changed goalies in an elimination game, and Joseph Woll played out of his mind, played really well, and the Leafs are still alive in their series against the Bruins. I shouldn't say he played out of his mind. He made some big saves, though.
He was very good.
Almost two goals above expected.
He was very good.
Yeah. Okay. So is it time for Tocca to do something like that? For example, you could do something as simple as this. As simple as this, my friends. Switch Petey and Suter.
Yep.
Petey up on with Miller and Besser. Suter knows how to play the middle, and he can play with Hoglander and McKeever. It could be as simple as that.
Yep.
Now, you could make it more detailed. You could have, that would work. Yeah, you could do something like you could put Bluger back with Garland and Joshua and say those guys have had success, and then you could put Lindholm between McKeever and Hoglander, regardless, and you could reunite the Lotto line. But regardless, it's kind of like whatever happens beyond that, like you have enough guys in this lineup that can play center,
sure,
right? Lafferty can play center, Suter can play center, Bluger can play center. So, you know, is it time to start the game, not go to it, start the game with the Lotto line?
I think so. I mean, it's hard not to look at the shot totals and say, okay, something's got to change. Because it's not just low, it's egregiously low. It's the second lowest total in NHL history through five games.
Yeah, JD the Jerk said the Lotto line played together quite a bit yesterday. According to Natural Stat Trek, quite a bit might be pushing it. It was 2 minutes together. But they were on the ice for three shots, four, and no shots against. I mean, that's pretty good based on the way that game went. And, you know, I just, even if it's not the Lotto line, I feel like what Tocchet has done so far is saying, well, it's got to be just more will, right? Like, you've got to want it more. You got to battle harder. And, hey, look, I'm all about, like, I think sometimes in the analyst community, we overthink hockey too much. And the X's and O's are important, and the line combinations are obviously important, but it does come down to will a lot. But I don't watch the Canucks right now and think, there's a team that's not trying very hard, right?
Well, I don't think it's got anything to do with the effort.
So from a coaching perspective, it is on the coaching staff to develop some tactics, whether that's new X's and O's or new line combinations or a new plan to break the puck out in order to change this, because The series, for the most part, I know the Canucks had a lot of possession in game two, right? The one they lost with all those shot attempts. So they dominated that game. But overall, they didn't finish with many shots. And it's kind of just been the same story in a lot of these guys. Like, overall, can we agree that the Preds have probably been the better team in this series?
Over the course of five games, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Like, over the course of five games, let me put it this way. The Preds' game plan has dictated this series more than the Canucks' game plan has dictated this series.
Well, to go back to my earlier point, when you were, everyone was having a good laugh when I just kept repeating, close it out. Part of that whole rant was you got gifted a few opportunities in this series. Let's be dead honest, if you're the Canucks. You're probably very fortunate to be up 3-1, right? Things have broken your way on a number of occasions for you to be up 3-1. It's a very real question to ask is when are the breaks going to stop happening and when are they going to go the other way? Like, for example, Nashville yesterday got a couple. The Dakota Joshua penalty was a bad penalty. Can we all agree with that? That was not a good play.
No, it was undisciplined play.
It was undisciplined play at the time of the game.
Yeah.
When I'm talking about closing it out, part of closing it out is do not make that play. That's kind of what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Now, the Preds get a power play in the third period. They convert on the power play again. I would say that it was somewhat fortuitous that there wasn't a challenge there because, as Rick Tocchet said, he was 50-50 on whether to challenge. Those are the things that I'm talking about. Like, I'm not trying to say that a one-goal lead in the National Hockey League is insurmountable. What I'm saying is, is that you have been gifted certain things over certain times. And let's be honest, 9 times out of 10, does Saros maybe make that save on Zadorov? That shot? Does that puck go in all the time? I know everyone was raving about how he got into the zone and it was a snipe show from Zadorov, but that's one that Saros probably wants back.
Yeah.
I would say. So, there's certain fortuitous moments last night where you're saying, hey, right now, with 13 left on the clock and a one-goal lead, like we've got an opportunity here for the biggest smash and grab of them all, which is win this series in five games, close it out. That's what I was trying to get at more than anything else.
But, right.
Yeah.
But you just said close it out.
I just kept
and
saying,
over again.
Well, yeah.
Got to close it out.
I do like the repetitive nature of close it out, actually. I'm going to get shirts made. Close it out in game seven.
So we've had a lot of conversation about the game in this first segment, and I do want to go into the Dunbar Lumber text line coming up next. There are a lot of questions and comments about the game, about the line combinations, about, as usual, I didn't bring it up, but a lot of people are bringing it up, Elias Pettersson.
Sure.
I actually thought he played okay last night. I thought it was progress last night, but he's still not at the level of where he needs to be.
See?
And you can what?
I said see.
See what?
I was telling you guys, like, Pettersson's playing well. And you're like, no, he's not. I'm like, well, it's a low bar. So you compare it to the low bar, he's playing pretty well.
He made that one nice touch pass to Mikheyev in the first period.
Progress.
And A-Dog is like, Petey is bringing it tonight.
He's back, baby.
I'm like, yeah, that's.
Yeah, but you got to understand where I'm coming from. Right?
I will.
When you're at the very bottom, anything is good.
That's terrific. That one pass to Mikheyev that he made.
On the heels of Bruff bringing up the reunification of the Lotto line. I will say this. Last night was.
I like that reunification.
Yeah.
It's like Germany is together once again.
Tear down this wall, Mr. Tocchet. I just think.
Big celebration pregame.
I just think that last night was probably a little bit more of evidence, for the argument that PD needs better line mates because Mikheyev. When those high danger chances are falling to Mikheyev, they suddenly become like medium danger chances.
Yeah, he cannot.
They're not as high danger.
Yeah.
Right? That's fair.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if he'll ever finish.
The puck on his stick just immediately drops it down a danger.
High danger and then Mikheyev danger chances? Can we have that classification?
Do you think anyone on the Canucks has been like, Mick, like, what kind of stick are you using?
Probably at this point.
Maybe change it up a bit.
He looks at it, he's like, is this a two-piece Easton? Like, what is...
I did notice something weird, though. I know we got to go to break, but there were a few times in the power play where Petey was in his windup spot where he scored many goals there in that spot, and he had a clear pass from Hughes, and Hughes chose to shoot it instead of pass it to Petey. And that always, I think it happened like 3 times last night. And every time it happened, it sort of made me raise my eyebrows. It's like you have a clear shot there, for Pettersson to take it, but are his teammates just also not confident that he's going to score? Is that what it is right now? Like
maybe,
because like that maybe. Looked weird to me. Because like normally Hughes has the puck, Petey's in his slot, he's ready with it. He's got nobody in front of him. His stick's right back there. He could tee it up.
Yeah, I was watching that. I was like, I feel that. That happens to me in beer league. They look at me for
Don't
the breakout.
For
they look at me for the breakout. They're like, reverse.
But man, like how the mighty have fallen if that's the case though, right?
The one guy's like, hey, Bruff's wide open. And the other guy's like, he sure is.
Yeah.
You're listening to the best of Halford and Bruff. You're listening to the best of Halford and Bruff.
Zadorov makes a move around McCarron to center. Driving to the Nashville line. Left wing. Nikita Zadorov shoots. He scores! The big man goes coast to coast. And Rogers Arena is shaking. 1-0 Canucks. 3:11 into the third.
8:01 on a Wednesday. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Halford Bruff, Sportsnet 650. Halford Bruff of the Morning is brought to you by the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. Experience the Dilawri difference today by visiting your nearest Dilawri Acura dealer today. We are in hour three of the program. Hour three is brought to you by Campbell and Pound Real Estate Appraisers. Trust the expertise of Campbell and Pound. Visit them on the internet at campbell-pound.com today.
We are coming to you live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet? What are you waiting for?
Kintec, that's what you're waiting for.
Oh, Jamie Dodd did it so much better than you.
Really?
When we were working together. Do you remember that, A-Dog? How well he'd nail the Kintec?
It gave me chills, actually.
Yeah, it was one of those goosebumps moments.
I thought about it for a few days afterwards.
Like all of a sudden, U2 would start playing.
Yeah.
Where the streets have no name.
Yeah, just a single tear rolls down my cheek.
It was just perfection.
We got some kind of breaking news as well, which is appropriate since we have Dodd coming up in a second.
Okay.
Oh, you want me to read it?
Well, yeah. I don't have it.
You were just looking at your phone. I sent it to you.
You didn't send me anything. Oh, I was looking at my phone because you were waving your phone in the air.
Okay, well, we got the Norris finalists. Unsurprisingly.
I don't have it. So.
Unsurprisingly, Quinn Hughes, Roman Josi, Cale Makar are your Norris finalists. Breaking news.
He's not the best in the business for nothing,
That's
folks.
That's why I'm here.
How about you don't wave the phone at me and you read the information on the phone?
All right, come on. You're going to lose your voice even more if you keep yelling.
But I'm so excited. I'm excitable. Let's go to the phone lines now. Jamie Dodd joins us on the Halford and Bruff Show on Sportsnet 650. What up, Jamie? How are you?
I'm great. A pleasure to step into the well-oiled machine that is Halford and Bruff.
Let me tell you, buddy. It is like clockwork in here. Let me tell you. I'm going to start with the goal call that was not challenged last night. If you're Rick Tocchet, are you challenging the 1-1 goal?
So I actually think he probably made the right decision. And I know because of what had happened in the Florida-Tampa game, right, that there was this idea that, you know, oh, if there's any contact at all, they'll probably overturn it. They're protecting the goalie so much. But this is a different situation. Once the puck is loose in the crease, right, I think it becomes very, very different in the NHL's eyes. And, you know, I guess the standard is incidental versus other than incidental. And watching the replays, I don't see that smoking gun from Gustav Nyquist, right, where he's going in and just, you know, wildly jabbing his stick at Archer Shelov's, and that's pushing the puck in. So I think the fact that it was called a goal on the ice and, you know, given how hard, like, the standard to overturn a call, I think it would have been pretty slim chances that they see more of an incidental contact there and overturn it. So given the moment, and as Rick Tocchet said after the game, look, we're still tied. We don't want to go back on the penalty kill. We still have every chance to win the game. I think he actually probably made the right decision.
Is your show with Drance today just going to be, like, defining incidental? Like going to the dictionary definition of
3 hours
of incidental, because Drance is already on Twitter, like fighting with everyone over incidental and what's other than incidental in the rule book, which is hilarious. You know, any other thoughts on last night's game? Like what would you say was the reason that this series is going six?
That's a tough one. I mean, I actually thought that was probably the best game that the Canucks have played this series. I think it was probably the first game where both teams are pretty happy with the way they played throughout the game. This series has been really, really tight. You know, a ton of one-goal games. The only exception, that game two loss for the Canucks in game two. And I think it probably came down to UC Saros making some really big saves, right? Like, you think about Brock Besser stopped in close. He had some other, you know, he gets the Elias Pettersson shot off his mask on a 2-on-1 there. And I thought there were moments last night where Saros looked not great, right? But the Canucks didn't punish him. And then he made the saves that he needed to make. Now, that doesn't mean that the Canucks were overwhelming or they got goal leads necessarily or anything like that. But it kind of came down to, you know, the Preds snuck one through on a screen, and the Canucks just weren't able to do that. I don't think that's an inherent flaw in how the Canucks were playing last night. That's just a thing that happens. I guess the other thing I would point to is the Canucks power play, looking just absolutely dismal, disorganized when they got opportunities in key moments. And then obviously the Preds eventually finally make a power play count for them. So those would probably be the two things that I point to.
When the Canucks practice tomorrow, assuming they will practice tomorrow in Nashville ahead of Friday's Game 7, do you think we might see significant changes to the forward lines?
I would be a little surprised if we do, because Rick Tocchet has been pretty adamant, really from the moment this series began, that there's not a lot that the Canucks need to adjust tactically or in their line configurations. They just need to execute better, right? And if he didn't change things up after, you know, a loss in Game 2, after some fairly concerning efforts on the road in Nashville, despite them getting the win, you know, again, I think they played maybe their best game of the series last night. So I don't see necessarily a lot of reason for him to break from what he's been saying and go change things up. I mean, the Miller line had another really, really good game, right? Like, they have those shifts out there where you just feel like they're going to score eventually. And I thought the Lindholm line was pretty good again. I thought there were signs of progress from the Pettersson line. So I think if you're Rick Tocchet, like, you stick to what you've been preaching, you stick to your guns, you keep this group together. I'm not sure there's another more obvious configuration out there that's going to get you better results.
So the Lotto line was reunited in bits and pieces last night, and I thought it looked pretty good. Now, it was only a two-minute sample size, according to Natural Stat Trick, but 3 shots, 4-0 against in a series where the Canucks have struggled to get 20 shots in a game. Like, the most they've had is 21. Do you think he's at least considering that?
I mean, it's probably something he's thinking about, but I mean, even go back to when Tocchet put the Lotto line together for a stretch of games, right? And they had that incredible first game, and Rick Tocchet was pretty forceful after it, right? Like, hey, this is not going to be a permanent thing. It's not really my preference. I don't love to load up one line. Like, he's never really been in love with the idea, even when he put them together in the middle of the season with playing the Lotto line. And since then, it's been, you know, really, really rarely deployed. I don't know that he started a game with it really since January. I think more likely is that we see it in spots, right? Whether it's to boost Elias Pettersson's minutes because you're trying to keep Nils Höglander's ice time down and you're looking for other spots to get Pettersson out there, whether it's because you're trailing and you're chasing the game and you need it. I think it's an option he can go to during games, but I think he likes the idea of, you know, Miller, Lindholm, Pettersson down the middle. Now, Pettersson needs to start playing a lot better, obviously. And I thought he took some baby steps last night, but he needs to start playing a lot better to make that a reality. But I think that's what Tocchet wants. And, you know, they're still up. They're still up in the series. So just based on what Rick Tocchet's had to say during this series, I don't think he's going to be too prone to make some big moves in the lineup.
Do you think Tocchet is pretty happy with how the series is right now?
I mean, I think he probably loves that it's like, I called it a rock fight on my show yesterday. Like, this is a defensive, physical series. I'm sure Rick Tocchet loves that element of things. I think he would probably love for his team to be controlling play a little bit more consistently, to be generating more shots. But, you know, until that moment last night, they've been excellent on the penalty kill. They've been really good in the defensive zone, right? Limiting some of those dangerous chances. Nashville's had some moments off the rush, which is kind of their bread and butter, or one of their bread and butters. But, you know, the Canucks have been pretty good at limiting that even. So I think Rick Tocchet probably likes an awful lot of what he sees. I think Rick Tocchet probably just loves really defensive, fight-checking, physical playoff series, right? I'm sure he would love to see more shots on net, but I don't get the sense that he has a big problem with the way the series is going either.
How do they get more shots on net? Like, who is calling for all the slap passes? Is that a coaching decision or is that the players?
I think that's partly a coaching decision, right? Because you listen, I think, and look, I'm not an X's and O's genius or anything here, but like when he talks about, you know, shooting for that second stick, right? Like don't shoot it right at the net because that's where the screen is. There's got to be someone in front, and then there's a stick that you're looking for a deflection or a slap pass. I think that's part of the strategy, right? That's part of the reaction to Nashville's fronting and Nashville's commitment to blocking shots. And so like the shots on net, it stands out. Now I will say, and I think Shorty even commented on it on the broadcast last night, like first shot or what looked like the first shot of the game for the Canucks, Teddy Bluger gets a wrist shot on, it goes up for a moment and then they take it away. And it's like, well, that looked like a shot on goal. So I do think there's some stinginess going on with how these are being scored. And then, you know, you look at natural stat trick, I think they had like 25, 26 scoring chances last night, right? So more than they had shots on net. I think there's an element here of maybe they're overthinking it a little bit with the slap passes, but I also don't look at last night and think like, oh, that was a punchless offensive performance. Like, I think they had their opportunities to score goals. They just didn't make the most of them. Yes, more shots on net. Maybe you need to tweak it a little bit to go away from the slap pass, but I also understand why they're doing that. I think it's part of how they're trying to avoid the shot blocking tendencies from the Preds.
Is part of all this, and if it comes down in a lot of cases to a lack of execution, is part of all this that the Canucks just don't have the wingers that they need? And that's why they were trying so hard to get one at the trade deadline.
I mean, if we're going into the offseason right now, right? Like, and I'm not saying they're going to lose this series, but just like imagine however the playoffs end going into the offseason, that's got to be priority number one, right? Just finding some more creativity. And I think Rick Tocchet, though, I think Rick Tocchet probably has an ideal way of playing offense, and that does involve a lot of, you know, deflections and screens and layered screens and from the point and all that. But I'm sure he would love to be able to build in a little bit more of that offensive creativity. But as you say, like, who are the players that can do that, right? And you look at, it's not just, you know, who's playing with Elias Pettersson, but even beyond Brock Besser and Connor Garland, who are the wingers that really have that element of, okay, they can keep up with high skill plays, they can make those east-west plays? They don't really have them. So I think, as you said, like that explains why they were so interested in Jake Guentzel. He would have been an amazing fit for this team. I think they were hoping Elias Lindholm could have provided some of that on the wing in the top six, but I think that's a huge part of it, is there's only so many ways this team can successfully play. I think Rick Tocchet recognizes that. I think that's one of the reasons that, you know, we've seen the offensive focus from this team that we have.
One lineup change that won't be happening is Vasily Podkolzin, because the Canucks just announced that general manager Patrick Alvin has assigned Vasily Podkolzin to Abbotsford. That actually came down 30 seconds ago. So there's some more news there. You're listening to the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd joins us here now. I've seen a few people text in, and I'm not sure I agree with it, but I want to put it out into the ether anyway, that part of this, I mean, record low shot total from the Canucks. Again, we've mentioned it a few times, but it's 92 through five games. It's the second lowest total through five games in NHL history. May have something to do, either intentionally or just with the thought in the back of their mind, that they have their third string netminder playing in net. Do you have any, you know, do you lend credence to this thought process at all, or do you think it's just kind of like a theory that doesn't go anywhere?
I don't know. I mean, like, what did Artur Shelov do last night to, you know, make his team concerned, right? If anything, I thought he was playing with a lot of confidence, probably giving them a lot of confidence. They'd already picked up a win with him in the series. You know, I get that at some level, as much as you say, like, hey, we're not going to change the way we play no matter who's in net, that Thatcher Demko is such a rock back there that maybe he gives you that little bit of extra confidence. But again, I don't think they were playing, you know, hyper-conservatively last night or anything. I don't think they were, you know, declining to push the attack or anything because they were worried about odd man rushes going against Artur Shelov. I think Shelov was playing a really good game. I just think a lot of their shots missed the net. They tried a lot of slap passes that weren't there. They tried a lot of, you know, shoot wide for a deflection that didn't quite come off. I don't think that's because Artur Shelov isn't that. I think that's part of their game plan for attacking the Preds.
Okay, follow-up question. Would you consider starting Casey DeSmith in game six?
Ooh, that's a tough one. You know, though, I think the argument for starting Casey DeSmith would be that the Canucks, because it's kind of the high floor versus high ceiling thing, right? But, you know, I know Artur Shelov flashed the glove a little bit last night, but it wasn't as if those were like cross seam passes where he had to explode across the crease and, you know, reach the glove out and make this incredible save. He was still square to the shooter on those saves, not taking anything away. They were really nice. And I guess the argument for starting Casey DeSmith would be the Canucks have been really good at keeping shots to the outside, right? Making sure the goalie is set, not allowing that pre-shot movement from the Predators that Casey DeSmith could struggle with. Now, if you're asking me just subjectively who's looked better in their two starts, I'd probably say Artur Shilov. But I also understand that the Canucks, I think, probably have them ranked pretty similarly, right? I mean, that's just a guess on my part. I wouldn't have a problem with going to Casey DeSmith in Nashville. He won the last game he started there. I thought he was really calm. But I also understand why you would roll with Artur Shilov. I do just think, like, the Canucks are playing a game that I think is tailored to how Casey DeSmith can have success right now, which is, you know, keep it really, really simple for the goalie. Don't demand too much of that really kind of athletic, dynamic stuff that Artur Shilov is more capable of.
You could make the argument that the best goaltending performance from the Canucks we've seen in this series was DeSmith, 29 saves, one goal allowed in game three in the first game in Nashville.
Yeah, 100%. And again, like, I think part of that was all credit to DeSmith, but you look at the saves he was making in that, and it was a lot, you know, from well outside, above the dots, on the walls, right? They tried a ton of those cross-seam passes, but the Canucks broke them up. Like, they made the environment really straightforward in front of Casey DeSmith, and I think that's how you need to play in front of Casey DeSmith, right? If you're asking him to make these, like, really explosive, you know, impressive saves, like Thatcher Demko or even Artur Shilov are capable of, that's probably not going to turn out well for you. But when you keep it simple, he can make those saves. The Canucks have done a really good job of that. So I think it's an interesting discussion. I mean, we're going to have a lot of time to chew it over between now and game six on Friday. But I think the Canucks have every chance to win in Nashville, no matter who they started next.
So overall, how are you feeling about the Canucks' chances in this series? Still pretty good?
Yeah, I still feel pretty good. I mean, like, the games have been so close. I haven't seen anything that suggests to me, and I know they played, you could argue they played pretty poorly in both games of Nashville despite getting the win, but I haven't seen anything from Nashville that suggests that the Canucks are going to get, you know, rolled over in Nashville, right? Like, I think they should absolutely be in that one, and then even if you lose, you're coming home with another chance to win it in game seven. So look, I don't think it's a guarantee. I don't think it's they're home free or anything, but they can absolutely win this. I think they're obviously still the favorites, right? Up 3-2. There's some things you'd love to see better. I mean, I'm shocked we haven't talked more about Elias Pettersson on this show, because, like, the series is sitting there for him, right? He had his opportunities last night where if he converts on a couple of those chances, you know, this series is done, and we're having a very different conversation about Elias Pettersson. So, like, I think it's there for them, and they just have to go out and earn it. They've shown that they're capable of doing that. They played really well last night for most of it, I thought. So I still like their chances. It's not a guarantee. Nashville's a good team. It's going to be hard fought, but yeah, they can absolutely still do this.
And you also have to point out the fact that in order for the Canucks to lose this series, they would have to suffer three losses in a row for the second time this year. Like, it's only ever happened once, right? Yep. Like, I mean, that was one of the calling cards of the regular season, was they did such a job of not losing consecutive games in a row. And it was just that four game stretch in late February, the only time they lost three in a row. I know the playoffs are an entirely different beast than the regular season, but there is something to be said for this team's ability to not lose multiple games in a row.
At this point, would we accept just a flash of skill by Petey that leads to one Canucks goal, like a really nice play? Not necessarily like a super complete game where you're like, wow, he was driving the lines out there. But, you know, whether it's him setting up Mikheyev and Mikheyev actually scoring or him making a really nice play on the power play, just anything that leads to a goal, would we accept that?
Oh, I think everyone would accept that, right? Because again, you look at last night. I think he flashed some high skill plays, as you said. Like, unfortunately, they're going onto the stick of Ilya Mikheyev, and then it's into the crest of the goalie, right?
Well, that's my argument for the Lotto line, by the way, right?
Yeah,
like let him. No. Like Nora, for the whole. It's funny because, like, right up until last night, I was like, I would almost like Halford would bring it up, and I would always be like, oh God, like, come on, buddy. Like, this is like, you know, I don't know,
Canucks form stuff, right? Like, this is just,
How absolutely dare you?
I felt like disdain for the suggestion. Like, it just seemed, But after last night, I'm like, maybe Helford was onto something, because, like, if Petey is going to flash some skill, doesn't he need to flash it with someone who might actually finish off that flash?
It would be nice, right? It would be nice. But I think to your point of just, you know, having that moment, because I think you could look at it and say, like, yeah, probably territorially that line had the edge, right? You know, they had more scoring chances for than they did against when they were out there. But we're also talking about Elias Pettersson against Colton Sisson. So it's nice to see those baby steps, but it doesn't matter if you don't finish. It doesn't matter ultimately if you don't convert and you don't put a goal up on the board. And last night, I mean, that was a situation where we might be talking about a series being a wrap. We might be talking about a round one victory if one of those key moments does turn into a goal for Elias Pettersson. Now, I think my hesitation with the Lotto line is that you're getting enough from Miller and Besser anyways, that I don't need, like, you don't need to put Pettersson there for them, right? So I think your best bet is still, okay, we're going to get offensive production from Miller and Besser. We're seeing those steps forward from Pettersson and Hoglander and McCabe. So we're just going to keep rolling with that. Look for those situational moments to get Pettersson up on the Lotto line. But I hear your point too, right? I mean, what's McCabe at now? One goal in 50 games, something like that. How much can you reasonably expect from him in this moment?
Jamie, this was great, man. Thanks a lot for taking the time to do it. We really appreciate
it. Hold on.
Before
I go, am I crazy, or does A-Dog look a lot like Andrew Brunette?
I do.
Oh my God, I kind of see it.
Let's see.
I kind of see it.
A little bit.
Yeah?
I do.
I kind of see it. Anyway, did you notice that at the Hollywood? Like, I've never seen A-Dog before.
No, I was watching the game last night. I almost texted A-Dog, actually. I was like, Andrew Brunette looks like you're like your older cousin or something, or like your uncle.
Okay.
I was very struck by it. Anyways.
Well, maybe one day we'll meet and we'll have this little moment together. And
yeah.
Long-lost family members reuniting.
Well, you know what? Now that I'm on the Google image search, can confirm. You guys look a lot alike. Okay. Andrew Brunette and Andrew Cole.
You could be like his nephew or something.
Cool. Did you play hockey too?
No.
Not at all. I tried.
Dodd, go back to bed for a bit.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
See you, buddy.
Thanks, Jamie. Appreciate it. Jamie Dodd from Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650, here on Sportsnet 650.
You're listening to the best of Halford and Brough.